Hey folks, it's Brian Cook, your host, with a few words from this week's sponsor, AdamandEve.com. Go to AdamandEve.com and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. And when you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive three free adult DVDs plus a free mystery gift. And to top it all off, they'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. That's AdamandEve.com. Use the code FAN, F-A-N, at AdamandEve.com. Use the code FAN for 50% off at AdamandEve.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 164 of the Competitive Erotic Fan Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Upcoming shows include June 19th, that's the 4th anniversary and championship edition at the Virgil, featuring Kyle Kinane, Jared Logan, Max Silvestri, and more. But today's show comes from our late night staff battle, recorded January 21st, 2016, also at the Virgil here in LA, featuring staff members from both Conan and The Late Late Show with James Corden. This is round one, featuring writer Lori Kilmartin from Conan and writers Ian Carmel, Eliza Skinner, and Jared Logan from Corden. Reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First, you'll hear them draw topics, then we'll fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy. Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers walked into a restaurant. A restaurant I can't tell you the name of because the first part of this story is 100% true. It had been a long day for Chad. He and his family had driven all the way to Culver City from Malibu. For you non-Angelinos listening at home, that's a trip of nearly 24 miles. But keep in mind, it is nearly unconscionable for a celebrity to exert even the smallest effort or be inconvenienced in the least. Don't believe the back pages of People magazine, my friends. Celebrities are not just like us. No matter how many paparazzi shots you may see of Jessica Alba holding a Starbucks cup or Taylor Swift in yoga pants with her hair just a mess, I implore you to remember, celebrities are better than you. They're like LA's Google employees. Chad, with his family in tow, approached the door of the destination restaurant that is famous for a cheeseburger. For the uninitiated, a cheeseburger is ground beef with melted cheese on it. Can you even imagine such luxury with your puny non-celebrity minds? Probably not, because statistically speaking, zero of you are likely to have ever been members of seminal 90s LA punk funk outfit the Red Hot Chili Peppers, famous for such hits as the one where Anthony Kiedis sings, "Move it over, Dad, because I'm a double dipper." A lyric from the song Love Roller Coaster, which according to his autobiography is a reference to Anthony Kiedis losing his virginity to his dad's girlfriend. I can only assume that autobiography was written in crayon on the back of a Rite Aid receipt for Axe body spray and Plan B pills. Anyway, Red Hot Chili Chad and his family were asked for their IDs as they were attempting to enter a 21-plus establishment. I'm Chad Smith, drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, he literally said. Okay, replied the doorman, I need to see everybody's ID. Chad went on to explain that their daughter did not have her ID, but she was definitely 21. Author's note, a cursory inspection of the internet proves his daughter is 19. The patient doorman explained that what most people don't know is the law clearly states you don't only need to be 21 to be in a bar, you also have to have a valid ID on you at all times. Meaning, knowingly having an underage person in a bar is no more illegal than letting a 50-year-old without a proper ID in. Something most people don't know, so just be cool when your bar staff tells you something, they're just covering their own ass, don't be a bunch of fucking dicks. No one cares what band you play in, they just want to have jobs tomorrow. Tip your servers. The doorman patiently explained that there was nothing he could do, but they were welcome to order food to go. They begrudgingly did just that, in spite of the fact that one-third of the party was the drummer on a song called Suck My Kiss. When their food arrived and they were presented with a bill, however, the multi-millionaire tried to convince the bar manager they should not have to pay since they drove all the way from Malibu, the aforementioned harrowing journey of roughly 24 American miles. Author's note, they could have had identical cheeseburgers at the restaurant's other location in Santa Monica, 6 miles closer to Malibu. When the bar manager explained that he would not be comping their meals, Smith's wife, whose name I did not Google out of disrespect, asked for the bar manager's business card. When he informed her that he did not have one, she replied, "Wow, I can't believe you don't get a business card, what with all that power." I can't stress enough that this is a word-for-word quote from the wife of the drummer who also plays in Sammy Hagar's supergroup Chickenfoot. They paid and they left, but they were not happy about it, vowing to call and report the egregious act of upholding the law back to the bar manager's boss. Author's note, in a beautiful twist of irony, as I sit at a bar, Rush Street, composing this very thinly veiled treatise on privilege and entitlement as applies to the treatment of the service class in Los Angeles, a waitress just now, even though I had a half full beer in front of me, asked if I wanted to order another one before happy hour ended. Yes, yes I do. Thank you, waitress, and please know you are the closest things to angels this godforsaken hunk of stone hurtling through space will ever produce. Legal note, I cannot claim that any of the rest of this story is true, but it probably is. Chad Smith, who has not strayed one iota from his band's punk rock ideals, escorted his family back to his 2003 hybrid Porsche Cayenne crossover for the journey home. Barely 30 minutes later, he and his wife were fucking because demeaning a plebe is the only thing that gets Chad Smith hot. They went at it harder than the night they met at the soft opening of a Hard Rock in Phoenix, where Chad signed a broken cymbal with the phrase, "Keep on rockin', but put the apostrophe between the I and the N." They went at it for hours. Each thrust from Chad's ignorant dick made waves of ecstasy crash over his shrill, petty fourth wife. Every time she thought about her man bravely condescending an underpaid member of the working class, she shrieked louder and louder and louder. But those shrieks were drowned out by the honking of hundreds of car horns as they'd been parked in the middle of the Highway 101 this entire time, like the entitled fucking cunts they are. The ensuing traffic jam led to countless people missing important appointments all over Los Angeles and the deaths of several others who didn't get to hospitals in time for life-saving operations. But Chad Smith, drummer for a band that sounds like Maroon 5 crossed with System of a Down, fronted by a developmentally disabled Steven Tyler, deserved it. His wife deserved it. They deserved anything. They deserved everything. They deserved cheeseburgers. Author's note, their daughter didn't notice them fucking because the children of celebrities never look up from Instagram. Addendum to the story. I wanted to get a joke in here that I couldn't find a place for, so let me just close with saying Anthony Kiedis looks like Machete with a meth addiction. The end. All right, Brittany, if I could please get those suggestions, and please welcome your round two competitors who will be writing based upon your suggestions, Lori Kilmartin, Eliza Skinner, Ian Carmel, and Jared Logan, ladies and gentlemen. You can do better than that for your round two competitors, I believe. Fantastic. Hi, everybody. Hey, we're real close, huh?
Yeah,
let's start with Ian Carmel. Mr. Ian Carmel, writer for the Late Late Show with James Corden. Ian Carmel. All right, here's how this part works. I'm going to draw one suggestion. If Ian likes it, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I'll draw a second one, but then you will all vote with your applause on which one Ian has to write. Ian, your first one is... The View.
Oh. I'll take a look at another one.
All right. Patti LaBelle is your second option. So, with your applause, who wants to hear The View? Woo! Who wants to hear Patti LaBelle? Patti LaBelle it is. Ian Carmel, let him hear it. And keep it going for Lori Kilmartin from Conan.
Hi.
Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Your first option is Bananas in Pajamas.
Okay. I'd love to hear another option.
All right. Elmo.
I'll give it to the audience.
Who wants to hear Bananas in Pajamas? Who wants to hear Elmo? I think that's Bananas in Pajamas.
Oh, yeah?
There you go. Lori Kilmartin, keep it going. Keep it going for Jared Logan. Your first option is Gerard Depardieu. It's almost like they knew you were going to have a snifter of red wine in your hand and a cardigan.
Yeah, let's see what the other one says.
Okay. Tom Brady is your second option.
If you want a good one, do not choose that one.
Who wants to hear Gerard Depardieu? Who wants to hear Tom Brady?
Yes, Tom Brady.
Gerard Depardieu, indeed. Keep it going for Jared Logan. And finally, Ms. Eliza Skinner.
Hello.
Your first option is Martin O'Malley.
Let's see what else there is. See if there's someone anybody cares about in there. That's mostly little pictures.
Yeah, a lot of dick pics in these. A lot of dick pics.
Make this do it. This dick.
Daniel Plainview is your second option. So who wants to hear Martin O'Malley? Daniel Plainview. Of course you do. Eliza Skinner, there you go. Big round of applause for your round two competitors. Big round of applause for your round two competitors. That's more like it. Mr. Jared Logan from The Late Late Show.
Hi. Okay. Gerard Depardieu. Friends, thespians, honored colleagues, we have gathered here tonight to celebrate the career of Gerard Depardieu. Gerard has starred in 217 films. That's more than any actor that has ever lived. He is a Chevalier of the Legion du Honneur, the winner of a 1990 Best Actor Award at Cannes Film Festival, and has the largest head of any known land mammal. Gerard Depardieu's head is roughly the size of a Toyota Yaris, and it is filled with wine, rich, tangy Cabernet Sauvignon from the Sauvignon region of France, where Gerard might have grown up, maybe. This man is known for his acting, but who can forget his philanthropy? For example, we all remember when we read the news that the St. Francis Dam had broken due to flooding, and Gerard Depardieu saved thousands of Angeleno lives by using his massive cabeza to block the breach in the dam wall and stop the rushing water. News footage of this was included in Gerard's hit 1991 comedy, My Father the Hero. Let's talk about all 217 of Gerard's films. Who could forget Peter Weir's 1990 comedy Green Card, co-starring master thespian Andy McDowell? Gerard plays a Frenchman who enters into a marriage of convenience with McDowell to get his, you guessed it, green card. But then the unexpected happens, and they fall in love. The film was hailed as realistic by critics. But audiences loved the scene where Gerard, sweaty and panting, shirtless, with no discernible dividing line between his chin, neck, and chest, unzips his pants and enters McDowell, gently, pumping with ardor, until McDowell softly responds, "Okay, okay, okay, get off." Or how about Gerard's performance in 1998's The Man in the Iron Mask, where Gerard played the titular role, and an army of 300 special effects technicians labored for 4 months in order to build a mask large enough to fit Gerard's vino-soaked noggin. People loved the scene where Gerard engaged in angry frottage with co-star Leonardo DiCaprio before slapping him and angrily announcing, "I'm not your whore!" Of course, that scene was completely improvised. As Gerard often says, sometimes you have to leave the script behind. How about 1492, Conquest of Paradise, wherein Gerard's character fellates the entire Florida panhandle until the New World ejaculates, covering Gerard's face in rich North American molasses. Many people don't even remember Depardieu's 2008 film, Babylon A.D. But of course, Gerard's greatest role has to have been in 2012's The Life of Pi. People said they could never make a film about a boy and a tiger trapped on a raft in the ocean. But when Gerard Depardieu signed on to play the raft, suddenly there was buzz. Because Depardieu is a name that commands respect in this town. 2.5 hours of movie magic ensued as a young boy and a Bengal tiger fell in love all over Gerard Depardieu's massive smiling face. Who can forget the scene where Depardieu tongue fucks the tiger's vagina, while the Indian actor, whose name nobody can be bothered to remember, pumped his dick in and out of Depardieu's cavernous nostrils. Come on my face, my friends, the raft exclaims. I am your loving raft! I promised we'd talk about all 217 of Depardieu's films, and suffice to say, they are like being fucked by a rock-hard baguette of bread. And we have now come to the limit of my knowledge of the country of France. So tonight we've gathered here at the Golden Globes to give Gerard Depardieu the Lifetime Achievement Award. That's right, this is the award show that throws caution to the wind and never plays it safe. So here to present the award to Gerard is Best Actress winner Lady Fucking Gaga. The end.
Jared Logan. Thanks, pal.
Hey, it's Eliza Skinner from The Late Late Show.
Okay, we need you on set, Mr. Lewis, the PA said, holding the trailer door open and ignoring the chatter in her headset.
I'm sorry. I don't know who you mean, replied the man seated on the threadbare couch, not moving.
Sorry, Mr. Day-Lewis?
No, Melissa. I am Daniel Plainview, silver miner turned proprietor, turned prospector.
Oh, right. Okay, well, they need you on set, Mr. Plainview. Oh, wait, she said, holding her headset. Never mind, another extra passed out from the heat. We're going to hold for 20. She shut the door as Daniel Plainview cracked open a LaCroix and stared in the mirror. There was a knock at the door again, and it opened just a crack. Hiya, it's me, Paul Dano. Boy, oh boy, am I excited to be in this movie with you. Big fan. Really, just the way you act so hard, you know? Like, whoa, acting. Anyway, I just wanted to say hi. Hello. Cool. Hey, so listen, Paul said, stepping inside awkwardly. I wonder if you might have any pointers for me? This is my first big role, and I think you're just the best.
The best silver miner turned oil prospector?
No, silly, the best actor. You're Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Plainview stood and hurled the LaCroix across his trailer, shattering the tub of red vines by the sink.
I, sir, am Daniel Plainview, he screamed.
Paul Dano was startled. He hadn't meant to make the actor angry. But more surprising than that, he had never been so hard in his life. Something about Daniel's commitment to character really made him chub. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for... yes, of course, Mr. Plainview. Daniel Plainview looked at Paul Dano, his eyes blazing like a 19th century New York butcher slash gangster, but not exactly like that. Just, you know, you could detect a similarity. He glanced down at Paul's waist and saw his thick hog straining at the fabric of his cargo pants. Plainview smiled greedily.
It looks like I've piqued your interest. Can I introduce you to my son and partner, H.W.? Plainview unzipped his pants and his flaccid dick fell out with a thud. It sounded like a sock full of tangerines hitting the floor. Plainview pushed Dano against the wall and kissed him hard and wrong. Lots of teeth. As he did, Paul could feel the man's boner inflate like a parade balloon, ominously, in secret. The two men slid down the wall and onto the floor in a tangle. Plainview fumbled at Dano's pants. I don't understand. What is this? He said. A zipper, mumbled Dano. Never heard of it, said Plainview. Oh, fuck yeah, moaned Dano, grinding against the Oscar bait. They tore their clothes off and Plainview pinned Dano on the floor. He straddled Paul Dano's chest, panting. What do you want? Breathed Paul. Drainage, he said, nudging his monstrous boner against Paul Dano's lips. Paul Dano started to lick Plainview's huge cock. His mouth was too small to get the whole thing in, and his tongue is frustratingly small. Like, most people don't know that. Paul Dano has, like, a tiny, pokey tongue. So he just sort of jabbed at it. But that was exactly what Plainview was into, because he started whining, you drink my milkshake, drink it up! As he said this, Paul Dano placed his lips around the man's dick hole, delicately, and received a hot load of jizz shooting into his mouth. I'm such a fucking good actor! Shouted Daniel Day-Lewis. Paul Dano's dick immediately went soft. Breaking character at such a pivotal moment was honestly gross. He shimmied out from under Daniel Day-Lewis and grabbed his pants, hurrying back to his own trailer. Years later, when a PA on Love and Mercy fucked a young Brian Wilson, she fucked him the whole time, past climax, and later had to listen to him play guitar. And that was the greatest acting lesson of her life.
Eliza Scare.
From Conan, Lori Kilmartin, ladies and gentlemen.
They're coming to fuck you. Who? Characters from a children's TV show. What children's TV show? Sesame Street? Is it Elmo? No, they wouldn't let you have Elmo. But I wanted Elmo. Elmo doesn't want you. That bitch. He's on HBO now. There's more than one? There's two. 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 Is it Ben and Jerry? Did you mean Tom and Jerry? Fuck, yes. Is it Tom and Jerry? Are Tom and Jerry coming to fuck me? No, they're not animals. But I want to get fucked by animals. Well, as it turns out, animals didn't want to fuck you. Big Bird wanted me. Not anymore. He said your vagina was too big. He did? Yeah. Yeah, he was able to open his beak inside you. I liked that. He didn't. Well, who's coming? What color are they? Racist. Well, you know I can't fuck a purple character. Oh, right, I'm sorry, I forgot. Did you end up pressing charges against Barney? No. No one believed me. The cops didn't believe me. You should tell Hannibal Buress. I did. He didn't believe me either. Shit. So, what color? Yellow. Oh, is it Robert? Robert. SpongeBob. No. Is it Patrick? No, he's orange.
Oh, right.
Plus, he's fucking SpongeBob. Give me a hint. They're from Australia. Oh, God, not a wiggle. Well, what if it was a wiggle? My father was a wiggle. I can't fuck my father, not in January. Well, it's not a wiggle. Is it Nicole Kidman? She's not yellow, and she's not a character on a children's television show. But she's Australian. Should I just tell you? Please. Bananas in pajamas. I've never heard of them. What are they? Well, it's pretty complicated. They're bananas, and they're in pajamas. Oh, fuck, that's hot. Are they peeled? Nope. I like peeling bananas. Well, first you have to take off their pajamas. Oh, that's right, they don't have hands. What do their pajamas look like? They're black and white stripes. Like fathers. Pretend it's not January. I will. Have you ever fucked a fruit? What's a cucumber? It's a vegetable. No. First fruit, then. Are you nervous? Oh, I like bananas. The whole banana? Not that little brown spot. You know that little brown spot at the bottom? The banana's anus? Yes, the bananas. Is that a joke from your act from 1992? You're a fan. How many bananas did you say? One for each hole. Three? No, two. Oh. Right. Will they fuck me at the same time? No, who's ever ripest fucks first. Oh, sure, right. And they never fuck the same hole. Good to know. And when the soft, ripe banana comes at you, give him my ass. Right. You don't want that green banana in your ass. No. That's where Barney's tail. What? He left spikes. My God. That soft banana will be crushed into a daiquiri in less than a minute. And that green banana will drink it. Oh, I'll make sure he drinks it. You're sick. My dad was Australian.
Lori Kilmartin.
Thank you, Lori.
And your final competitor from the Late Late Show, Mr. Ian Carmel.
I shifted uneasily in my chair and craned my neck to look at the screen flickering above the Southwest Airlines gate. Delayed. Again. The sixth time tonight. It was beginning to look like I wouldn't make it back home in time for work. I emailed my boss, snowed in Philly. I'll keep you updated. I closed my laptop with resignation and began scanning the waiting area, searching for some comfort in the shared misery of my fellow air travel refugees. Everyone was dug into their computers or phones or sat down on makeshift beds cobbled together with suitcases and bundled up sweatshirts. Everyone but one person. A sturdy but elegant figure paced with urgency and intention as she whisper shouted into her phone. I could only parse every few words, but I could tell she was angry. She had a passion in her voice and an air of entitlement that felt well-earned. She carried herself, for lack of a better word, like a diva. I couldn't take my eyes off her, and our gazes crossed time and again, at first inadvertently, but then on purpose, and then with intention. She hung up her phone and started towards me. "Do I know you?" she asked. "Probably," I answered. "I was on one episode of Portlandia for 45 seconds. I'm pretty famous." She cackled. "Well, I guess that makes two of us. What, were you also on a lightly viewed IFC comedy?" "Oh no, honey. I'm Patti LaBelle," she snapped back. I straightened up in my seat. My mind was saying, "Who the fuck is Patti LaBelle?" But my mouth was saying, "Who the fuck is Patti LaBelle?" "Oh, don't act like you don't know me. I'm one of the greatest divas of all time," she said. And I was like, "Oh, like Aretha Franklin? No. Mariah Carey? No. Beyonce? No. Gladys Knight? No. Celine Dion? No. Barbra Streisand? No. Whitney Houston? No. Fuck that bitch. Like Natalie Imbruglia? No. I'm Patti LaBelle. I won 7 under NAACP Image Awards. I don't know what those are either. I won 2 Grammys. Look, lady, lots of people win Grammys. I sang Lady Marmalade. Lady Marmalade, how does that song go? You know, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?" I held her gaze for a moment and replied, "Oui." "I would like to sleep with you tonight." Of course I knew who Patti LaBelle was. I had been listening to Live, One Night Only, just earlier that night. She gave me a wry look. "You think you can handle patty cakes, white boy?" "What you even know about me? I know you've been shtupping your 41-year-old drummer, and I know I'm 10 years younger than that, and 10 years hornier." She gave me a quizzical look. "What does shtup mean?" "It's Jewish for fucking." And then it was on. Patty and I fell backwards through the service entrance of a closed airport Chili's to go. She ripped off her velvet jumpsuit pants and grunted, "Time to introduce yourself to the high priestess of good vibrations," and pointed to her 71-year-old vagina. I descended upon her in shambles labia like a thirsty desert traveler on a disgusting puddle of dirt water. Except if that puddle was flanked by so many pubic hairs. The only thing worse than the appearance of her eroded, awful vagina was my insatiable hunger for it. I couldn't stop. As I ate out the godmother of soul, she sang to herself under her breath. At first, I couldn't make out the song over the sounds of my cunnilingus, which sounded like a large, dying St. Bernard drinking a bowl of thick clam chowder. But eventually I made out the song. It was "Smack My Bitch Up" by Prodigy. I stopped brunching at her grandma trough. "Is that Smack My Bitch Up?" "Yup, and so's this." Patti LaBelle grabbed an economy-sized drum of buttermilk ranch from the Chili's to Go kitchen counter and smashed it over my head. We both came immediately. I was covered in ranch, and so was my dick. And by ranch, I mean my dick was covered in cum. "Oh, I know you didn't come. You didn't fuck me yet," barked LaBelle as she aggressively tore the rest of her clothes off. "Sorry, I just need a second," I stammered. "Nuh-uh, let me see that dick." I produced my now flaccid penis, and Patti LaBelle knelt down next to it and tore into her show-stopping number, "New Attitude." When she hit the crescendo and sang, I got a new attitude, she did so with so much stank bravado and power that I was instantly erect again. I cleared a pile of thawing burger patties off the counter and eased the ancient diva onto her fast food fuck throw. I proceeded to guide my achingly erect pink and purple battering ram into her awaiting novelty mask of a horrifying vagina. I was afraid I would come too soon and shared this concern with Miss Patty. She looked into my eyes and growled, if you goof before I say so, I'll murder you. And the police will never suspect me. I'm Patty LaBelle. Now shtup me, Jew boy. And shtup I did. There was no elegance, no grace, just powerhouse fucking between me, an overweight comedy writer, and her, a 71-year-old diabetic legend of the recording industry. I fucked Patty LaBelle harder than I've ever fucked before, and as I laid into her, her breasts began swinging like two pendulums. They were long, unbelievably saggy breasts, like two pantyhose stapled to a wall, and then each filled with one miniature pumpkin. As our fucking intensified, so did the swinging of her R&B titties. And as they swang, a curious thing began to happen. We began to elevate off of the ground. Her boobs were acting like the blades of a helicopter. We were fucking. We were flying. We were fuck flying. Oh, Patty, I should stop. We could get hurt, I said. No, you idiot, she snapped. Our flight's canceled. This is our one ticket home. Keep fucking me. Fuck us back to L.A. She was brilliant, and so fuck her I did. I fucked Patty LaBelle westward as the bounty of America stretched beneath us. The snow-covered streets of Philadelphia, the pastoral acres of the heartland, the majesty of the Rocky Mountains, all passed beneath our disgusting, sweaty, ranch-dressing-soaked bone-zone flying machine. We hovered over the Grand Canyon when I had to deal with another Grand Canyon. Patty LaBelle's vagina. I was going to come. Patty, I have some bad news, I said. What, did Whitney Houston fake her death? She cackled. No, I'm going to come. And we're 30,000 feet in the air. We could die. Don't fucking come, you fat piece of shit. We will die, she yelled. But it was too late. I came as soon as she called me a fat piece of shit. I tried to keep fucking her, but it was of no use. I was flaccid. It was like trying to put dental floss back into the box. If the box was a disgusting, awful, melted candle, and the floss was my useless penis, we cascaded towards the ground. I screamed, but Patty was strangely calm, at peace. Just then, one of those big-ass Deus Ex Machina eagles from Lord of the Rings swooped in and grabbed both of us in its talons and carried us safely to L.A. Then, we fucked that eagle. The end.
Ian Carmel. All right, let's get all the round two competitors back to the stage. Once again, I'm going to remind you of what everybody read, and then we'll vote. No voting yet. We started with Jared Logan with Gerard Depardieu, then Eliza Skinner with Daniel Plainview, Lori Kilmartin with Bananas in Pajamas, and finally Ian Carmel with Patty LaBelle. That's cute, huh? thanks, Ian. Pick a favorite with your applause. Jared Logan, Gerard Depardieu. Eliza Skinner, Daniel Plainview. So many rhymes in this round. Lori Kilmartin, Bananas in Pajamas. And Ian Carmel, Patty LaBelle. Well, 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 that's Ian Carmel. I'm Patty LaBelle, your round two champion. Big round of applause for all of your competitors this evening. Yourselves for coming out on this lovely winter night.
That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, featuring Andy Richter, among others, go back and download episode 163. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for more details on upcoming shows, you can follow me on Twitter, at Brian Cooking, or the show, at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.